I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. My name is Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent. And we're back. We're in action. Unfortunately, last week, we didn't record an episode on the Monday deliberately because there was a big game on the Monday night. Was it Man City or was it Liverpool?
It was Liverpool-West Ham Liverpool at the West Ham Stadium.
And then, due to things out of our control, we couldn't record on the Wednesday. So that was out the window. But we are back, very much back today. And as you've already heard, I'm not on my own. I do have with me the finest man around London town, the pride of Peckham himself, Chet Pitbrook.
It's so good to be here.
Do you prefer the pride of Peckham or pride of Salisbury?
Neither.
Where would you be the pride of if you were to be the pride of anywhere?
Well, I think for personal brand reasons, like associating yourself with where you live in London is better than associating yourself in like the nice place that your parents live.
Home of the strip.
That said, I actually lived. I'm kind of originally from Lewisham, so I feel like I am. Oh my god, this is really bad. Can we please start again?
No, we can't start again. But what we can say is that Jack is the pride of his family, and also the pride of the Independent. And to my left,
Twitter bio.
To my left, obviously on his phone on Twitter, as you might have predicted, it is the chief football writer of the Independent. His name is half Irish, is half Spanish, much like himself. It's Miguel Delaney.
Hello.
Would you like to talk about Red Dead Redemption, or should we just...
Let's
not talk about Red Dead Redemption. If you want to, Miguel is going to be starting a new computer gaming podcast of his own. Please get in touch with him. Miguel.Delaney@independent.co.uk. For the rest of us, I'm afraid it's just football, and we're going to start off with this weekend's games. And you know what? I'm going to say to you, Miguel, you can pick one game you want to talk about from this weekend. Which one's it going to be?
The one I was at.
The one you were at. Good choice.
City's thrashing of Chelsea.
Jack, this seems like a moderately significant result when Chelsea are losing 6-0.
Yeah, it's the kind of result that only... It does make you stand up and think, wow, like this... What an unusual result, given how Chelsea have been built for years on being difficult to beat, having a strong defence, being solid, having a kind of like grit that not all of the big six teams have had. And they are now completely unrecognisable from any other Chelsea team I can remember in the last few years. Like, I had this morning I decided to type worse than ABB into the Twitter search box and got thousands of tweets from Chelsea fans saying exactly that about Mauricio Sarri. I wonder whether Sarri's relationship with the Chelsea fans might be completely broken. I mean, it seems like it's now an incredibly niche view among Chelsea fans to want to support him. Like, the rest of them seems so against him.
It is. It's an interesting dynamic that has grown up in that way. And actually, maybe the nature of modern football sport and all that, but how divided it's become. I think you're right. I think the majority of Chelsea fans are really, really just not having this at all. But then there's this kind of really intense minority who are basically labelling the rest of them as kind of anti-intellectual, duller, you know, because they don't get what Sarri is trying to do.
It's quite interesting because I haven't really spent a lot of time on social media since that game, so I haven't seen any of this. I have noticed among Chelsea fans that I know a tiring towards Sarri, you know.
Yeah.
But surely they realise there's going to be no better time to kind of rebuild. They're going to have to rebuild anyway. Willian's out of contract soon. Pedro, you know, all the old guys, basically. David Luiz. Hazard's probably leaving, let's be honest. So all these guys are leaving. So you've got a guy who can use young players, a guy who plays good football. I know it doesn't always work, but, you know, Pep Guardiola had a season to get it right, and I think Sarri deserves at least a season, do you not?
Also, Guardiola basically had... I mean, the situations couldn't be more different. Guardiola came into a club that was essentially built for him, where even specifically Guardiola-minded players bought a year in advance, people like Sterling, De Bruyne, whereas that just hasn't happened in Chelsea. And one of the complaints I heard apparently that Chelsea players are making now is that they think that basically that there's an overload of tactical instructions now, and what they say basically, this squad isn't tactically intelligent enough. And this is what it gets back to, whereas Pep Guardiola walked into the ideal situation for him. Sarri's gone into a situation that none of it's really conducive. The squad isn't built the way, it's not constructed in the way that's conducive to his football. In fact, there's an argument that this Chelsea team actually needs managers who come in and are able to apply an easy-to-understand idea, a short-term managers like that. And then there's the whole question of what Chelsea want to be as a club, which is maybe a wider issue. I do feel a bit sorry for Sarri, because I think he's quite an honest, like, he's actually a bit refreshing as a coach, not just when his football is good, but in terms of, there are a few kind of agendas when he speaks, he's quite honest. I think he's got good ideas, but even allowing for these wider questions about Chelsea, it feels like this is a bit.
I think the whole idea has bit off far more than it can chew. Yeah. Like the structural barriers to Sarri succeeding are massive. Mm. Like you say, the comparison with Pep, the more you try and think about it, the more you realise, in fact, the situations are really very different. Like, yeah. Pep was always going to have endless money, endless patience, buy-in from players, buy-in from fans. Sarri hasn't got any of that. And I think you're right that the ultimately Chelsea squad is not conditioned for someone like Sarri.
No, I think there's an interesting thing. A friend of mine was at the Opta Pro Forum, I think that's what it's called, the other day. Like, it's a big statistical sort of thing where people put on seminars and show the latest in analytics in football, essentially. And one of the presentations was about how Chelsea came to the decision to hire Sarri. And if you look at the numbers of his Napoli team, it was an outstanding football team based on what they could do with the ball, with not huge amounts of resources put into that playing squad, but then what he made happen on the pitch from scant resources was very impressive. If Chelsea believe that they hired that guy, which they must do, because, you know, that was something that they worked on all summer and, you know, it dragged out, but that was always the guy they wanted, why would you not stick with him for longer than a year? Do you see any way that they do actually fire him before the end of this season?
Yeah, I think it's possible, although from the indications are that they're going to say things at the moment. But I think it's basically because it requires too much change around Chelsea to really maybe bring out the best of Sarri. And when it really comes to it, I do wonder whether the club has that much patience, because they can basically just see, well, okay, we can make all these changes, but we can also get someone that will work right now. An agent put it to me yesterday that a lot of this, especially given you mentioned Napoli like this, it's basically like somehow an idealist like Che Guevara was imposed on a superpower like the USA as president, because that's going to, the difference in outlook in both. Chelsea are just the most modern of super clubs in that way, even if their lack of investment rate has seen them drop away a bit, which is another wider issue, I think. And Sarri is basically an idealist. So even the way he was speaking after the game yesterday, and even the way he behaves with his coaching, like he's immune to a lot of the pressures of big clubs in that way.
Yeah, I just think, like, the more I think about it, the more I think Sarri is probably the right man at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing we know about managers coming in to work at a club, like, you know, people always talk about Pochettino 2014, Klopp 2015, Guardiola 2016. All those guys had young players.
Yeah.
You need young players to buy in so that you can mould them. Sarri doesn't have any young players. It's a really old Chelsea squad. And until they get some younger players, I don't see how someone like him could work.
Also, all those clubs, even then, gave the managers more authority, maybe in terms of, not so much bringing players in, but actually getting rid of players
that didn't want to buy in,
which is pretty key. Like, Pep got to get rid of Joe Hart, eventually Yaya Toure, Mangala.
Poch got rid of Kabul, Asuakoto, Lennon, Adebayor, Bentaleb, Townsend.
Klopp even got rid of, I'm trying to think, the word example.
They got rid of Sturridge and then brought him back. You do need, you're right, like, the manager needs authority to make those changes, and he needs young players. And Sarri is just, like, it's so hard. Like, it's just not going to happen. I think we can say now that it's, like, he doesn't have the conditions. He isn't going to have the conditions he needs to impose, inverted commas, Sarri ball
Chelsea. And he's not a pragmatist in the way that will kind of get them out of this hole for the moment.
Okay, here's one I was thinking. Who are the kind of short-term, get-the-lads-going-again options?
It's actually, well, they can't, like, basically can't bring Conte back because there's just too much discord there between them. But a Conte example is someone like, go on, sorry.
One legendary Europa League winning manager, formerly of Chelsea, who will be out of contract this summer, currently works in the Premier League. has a little moustache.
It's Rafa, mate.
Of course, actually. They're only an openly manager.
Rafa's issue with Chelsea was always that the fans hated him. Yeah. But now they've got Chelsea got a manager who the fans hate even more than they hated Rafa.
Yeah,
so politically, now is the best time to bring Rafa back in, and the Chelsea fans will be like, actually, you know what? He didn't think he was proper Chelsea last time, but he's more Chelsea than Sarri. Let's get Rafa back in. You heard it here first, independent.co.uk.
Who was it that was wanted Rafa to get the Arsenal job?
It was literally me.
I thought it was. So I think we've seen that Jack likes Rafa.
We stan Rafa on this podcast.
We do. Anything else from Man City, Chelsea, Jack? Is there anything to say from the Man City point of view apart from bravo?
It was a little bit. I mean, I know the Arsenal comparison's been laboured, but it literally was like watching late Wenger Arsenal go to City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United and get absolutely totaled in the first 20 minutes. Scoring from every attack. I think City, were it not for the Newcastle game 10 days ago, City, generally speaking, are on another level at the moment. But they will still require another drop from Liverpool in order to make it. I think they'll do it.
What's a more insulting description of a team? Late Wenger Arsenal or late Mourinho United?
That's a good one. I mean, Wenger never had a Mourinho season. No. But they were consistently rubbish for a long time.
The season when they got knocked out by Bradford City and stuff, all that.
That was really bad, but they would always wind up finishing fourth or fifth anyway.
At the bottom, Cardiff City are the big winners. An incredible finish to the game in Southampton where it looked like they'd blown it. But they won with a late goal from Kenneth Zahor, who we've not heard a lot about this season. Cardiff are outside the relegation zone for the first time in what must be months. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the actual statistic, but Huddersfield and Fulham are a long way off. But then we have Southampton on 24, Newcastle 24, Cardiff 25, Brighton 27, Palace 27. I think Palace and Brighton will be fine, but the rest of those teams, it's four teams basically battling to avoid one relegation spot. How are you feeling about the battle at the bottom at the moment, Jack Pitbrook?
I'm feeling very bad for Fulham. I went to Craven Cottage on Saturday and Fulham were terrible. They're a complete mess. The Ranieri is another manager with no buy-in. The fans don't like him. They don't like the fact that he's tried to rip up the Jokanović style. They don't like the fact he's benched Kearney and Sessegnon. They're not taking to him. They're booing him. They booed his decisions on Saturday. I don't think the players especially like him either. And I think they're definitely going. I just think they're definitely going down.
Looking good.
Yeah. There's no I don't see how it gets much better than that, because you need, when you bring in a manager like a relegation doctor like Big Sam or whoever, you need the players to want to do what the manager tells them to do. And if the players don't, if the players think, you know, I'm going to go next season, or I don't mind getting relegated to the Championship or whatever, which I think seems to be the ethos of Fulham, then you're in trouble. I think it's already looks to me. I mean, 12 games left already looks fatal.
Yeah. Can't disagree with that.
Maxime Lemarchand is the... I mean, they've bought really badly, obviously. Maxime Lemarchand is the worst defender I've seen in the Premier League this season. Ryan Babel from Besiktas.
I think you made a very good point the other day. I can't remember where you made it. But the fact that Fulham went out and signed Ryan Babel in January when they've got Ryan Sessegnon, who, you know, is one of the best young European players. And it ties in very well with a piece you wrote about the German youngsters and British youngsters compared with Michael Zorc, the sporting director of Borussia Dortmund. So that's on the website right now.
Yeah.
As part of a series of pieces you did in Dortmund last week. I guess by the time this gets published, your Jadon Sancho interview will be out there.
Yeah, well, what time is this going out, this podcast? I don't want to break the embargo.
Yeah, don't break the embargo. Just tell us how good it was.
On Thursday, I went to Dortmund on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, Dortmund put on a big media session for the British media. So there was someone from every newspaper there. We got about 25 minutes with Michael Zorc, the CEO, 25 minutes with Jadon Sancho. I really liked Sancho. I thought that he was confident, cool, chatty. Obviously didn't... not media, obviously hadn't had much media training at the start. He's been oh wow, all this media for me. But he wasn't inarticulate or anything.
He had some opinions. Yet, maybe he's not aware of the impact.
Well, that's kind of something which I wrote in my piece, is that he's, I mean, I'm allowed to break this embargo because it's just my own thoughts. I think he isn't that famous here yet. He will be. But I think nowadays, if Jadon Sancho were to get the tube, then probably it would only be nerds like us who would know who he was.
Yep.
Whereas in 5 years' time, he won't be able to get the tube anymore. Or in 3 years' time, he won't be able to get the tube anymore. Yep. I actually think, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, Well, I'm pretty sure, now I think about it, he's going to break the British transfer record, which is what currently held by Bale, 89 mm-hmm. million.
Yep.
I think when he leaves Dortmund, which I think will probably be like 2020, 2021, yep. either to City, United, PSG, Real Madrid or Barca, it will be for like 150, 200 million. He's that good. I really, only bad injuries, I think, could stop the rise of Jadon Sancho, because yeah. this kid is going to be absolutely phenomenal.
To be doing what he's doing in a league like the Bundesliga at 18 is absolutely remarkable. Slight tangent, who's the most famous footballer you've seen on the tube?
I once saw Damien Delaney in Vauxhall Starbucks.
It's close. He's near
That'll
near
do.
I saw Benoit Assuracotta on the Jubilee line once. And that is the end of tube footballers.
Miguel, have you got an answer to that question?
I don't think I have, actually. Don't think I've ever seen a famous footballer on a tube.
Near a tube station?
Fulham Broadway and Stamford Bridge.
I'm glad we asked Miguel that question. I will also just take a second to remind you all to join Independent Minds, the new subscription service from The Independent that gives you access to exclusive articles, events, ebooks, and a new app, all with no advertising. Subscribe today for just 15p a day. Visit independent.co.uk/podcast. That's a vanity URL that is now working. And hopefully we'll get more subscribers. I mean, you've had a couple of things behind that paywall, Miguel.
Yeah.
You too, Jack. A lovely piece on how South London's become one of the top breeding grounds in the world for football talent, fundamentally. And that's kind of why we're going to talk about the Champions League this week, because it's as big as it gets. We know that Miguel loves the Champions League.
He's Mr. Champions League.
Or as he likes to call himself, Señor Champions. And
biggest show in the game.
Yeah, it is the biggest show in the game, though. So, the Champions League, you wrote a brilliant preview to the round of 16 for the website, as well as previewing Man United PSG tomorrow, which is a massive game. The last 16 preview is interesting because it kind of looks at the tournament as a whole. For the people who can't read, don't want to read, why is this so big? What's so relevant about it? What's important?
Well, it's quite actually, and I think this is something of a recent trend. There was actually a spell where, particularly the Premier League, they almost became for their own clubs bigger than the Champions League. Where I think that's actually done a little bit of a flip because of the status that the Champions League has almost regained because of just how much weight the European Cup has put on the status of it, and also because it's become such a prime time week event. I think there's something that's become really apparent over the last two seasons, and that the quality of the games has genuinely been sensational. And it's a direct consequence of, really, in some way, everything that's bad about football in terms of the concentration of all resources and all focus at a handful of clubs, making these kind of these matches huge events, putting even more weight in the competition, meaning winning the competition has a greater meaning for all of these clubs because of the status of bestows and because of the justification of what they're doing. And it's just a supercharged event in every sense like that. And basically, you know, as I said in my preview, it's kind of greed made to look good because it is so entertaining, and yet at the same time I'm increasingly conscious now that this is probably what's destroying the very fabric of the game.
It's weird. On the one hand, it's the cancer that's destroying football, but on the other hand, it's absolutely delicious. Like the it is so exciting, and you kind of wish that it wasn't, maybe, but it is. And I think Miguel touches on something really important there, which is that people have realized in the last sort of 5-10 years that this absolutely is the future of the game. And it's all very well like saying, oh no, the domestic league is the most important, but bollocks, like that's not how it works. Like I literally couldn't roll off the last 10 La Liga winners for you because it doesn't really matter that much, whereas the Champions League is just where it's at.
Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Atletico Madrid, I think the only three. But your point stands, because you've got to look at it. If I'm a club in the other 14 in the Premier League, you already have to be thinking about this future when the top six disappear, right? I think that in Miguel's preview, he touches on it, you know, a European Super League does feel inevitable. And there was actually a thing on the BBC about it today, which suggested 2024 is about right. And I think that with the speed things are going and the contractual situation surrounding the territorial rights to broadcasting and a couple of the other UEFA things, I think 2024 is looking increasingly like the date when a European Super League could actually come to fruition in its first form, because I think we'll obviously see it evolve and change over time. But this looks like something that's going to happen. I think we can't avoid that. So for now, we just have to kind of enjoy it. Like, you know, we take the fact that we get the Premier League every week, and it's not going to be forever. You know, like, there's a chance that your kids and my kids won't have the Premier League as we know it. So should that affect how we watch the Champions League, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, should we enjoy Manchester City or should we enjoy PSG? I mean, it's almost exactly the same question. Yeah, like, morally, we should probably be more guarded against the Champions League because it is it's effectively a destructive force, or rather, it's not the competition that's a destructive force. It's the fact, it's like what the competition represents, which is an elite where only the best play the best. It is kind of encouraging the forces which are destructive to the game. It's not like the format of the game, and it's certainly not, it's not UEFA's fault that this is happening either, because the European Cup has such a historic importance in football. But yeah, like, I mean, it's a crucible of that greed, but if the Champions League didn't exist, then something else would replace it. I think we have to enjoy, I mean, if you like football, you have to enjoy the football. Like, the games are so, like Miguel says, it's all the best players, it's all the best games. It's a standard unlike anything you see elsewhere. It's a standard miles better than, like, the World Cup, for example. Yeah. It is just as good as it gets.
Yeah, completely. I mean, again, it comes back to that concentration of resources. And I think what's been particularly exhilarating as well is that it's really emphasised and accentuated this, what has been a kind of a gradual evolution towards attacking football due to tactical changes in the game, due to rule changes, but it's brought all this together. I mean, the last two seasons have just had, I think, the collection television events.
I remember we sent you to Barca PSG, yeah, and thinking it was going to be a great time. Then obviously after the first time, it looked to be over, but you still went. And yeah, I remember you were talking about not going, and I'm sure to this day you're eternally grateful that you did go, because quite often Miguel can get excitable around these big games. I quite enjoy it. It's one of the few reasons I've got him in the job. But he is brilliant around the big games, because he gets so excited and then comes up with like a million ideas in about a 4-minute span. And talking to you after that PSG Barca comeback is like, you've completely lost your mind.
So that's the ultimate example.
That final goal was insane.
Yeah.
Was it Sergio Roberto? Of course it was, yes.
But thank you for that. Thank you for that. But that was almost kickstarted, I think, this recent spell. And last season was saying that the Liverpool City games, Madrid Juventus, that was actually another example. Madrid Juventus looked like it was over after the first leg, after another special moment in that Ronaldo bicycle kick. And yet, even though Madrid still went through, they were pushed right to the wire. We looked at another incredible comeback, and then still more last minute. And it's like the pure entertainment of the competition and the really high grade entertainment just keeps going and going.
Liverpool City?
Yeah, it's proper primetime TV.
And we might as well talk about the games individually. I'm sure people have tuned in to hear that. Tuesday's games, there are two, Man United versus PSG and Roma versus Porto. So, Miguel, you're going to be at Man United PSG tomorrow, Old Trafford. Neymar is not playing, which is, I guess, the big... It's amazing how... Do you remember when we did the draw podcast? You know, and it was, wow, this is... Yeah. You know, PSG have to win it, and they're up against Mourinho's United, who are in a tailspin. This is kind of a new super club showing an old super club what they should be doing. And then what we've had since is PSG have struggled. They got taken to, extra time by a third division team in the French Cup. Neymar is out because it's his sister's birthday again. And you've got PSG not necessarily in the same shape they were in terms of terrifying someone like United. And United have completely changed since they sacked Jose Mourinho, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is in there and he's the messiah. He had talks last week, we understand, Miguel, as you reported today, with the Glazer family, which suggests he's closer probably than anyone ever thought to being hired as the permanent manager. The Sun went big on that last night, I believe, as well. So that would be interesting if Solskjaer does get confirmed. If Solskjaer beats PSG over two legs, can you see a way where he doesn't? But because didn't David Moyes get this far in the Champions League?
The one thing I'd say about it is, I mean, at the moment, all looks very positive for Solskjaer. And yet, because they still haven't appointed a director of football, remember, and the initial goal was to get a director of football in before the big managerial appointment. But yet, if he loses to PSG, they lose to Liverpool, and suddenly there's a few wobbles, then you can imagine the club basically rowing back a bit, and the vibe can change so easily. In saying that, maybe this is partly influenced by just a run of form, and it's always when teams run a sort of form, or alternatively, if say like, I don't know, Bournemouth are losing three games in a row, you're always kind of thinking, well, they're never winning a game again. At the it's a flip side of United. I think at the moment, they look like they're just not going to lose. And it is hard to escape the feeling that everything is going their way. So I think they'll knock PSG out. But then again, reality can intervene, and there's probably no reality like Kylian Mbappe running at Phil Jones.
I think isn't Cavani a doubt as well? So yeah, that would mean two of PSG's front three are out. I don't know. Maybe that would mean the team's better balanced.
Maybe
but
Di Maria might move further forward, which is interesting in itself, given his...
Although you think it might actually be almost what Tuchel would want, because in the sense that he'd probably rather play a more like organised defensive team for the away leg. Now he gets now he can because some of his big names are out. It's interesting. I don't really know which way to call it, because I think we don't really have like the data that we need to assess Man United, because we haven't seen United play in Europe under Solskjaer. We kind of have almost nothing to go on. And even with PSG, like the information that we have is pretty limited. Like I was there when they beat Liverpool in that crucial game in Paris in late November to go through. And they were really, really impressive that day. And if they can repeat that, then I think they'll probably beat United. But they did have Neymar and Cavani that day, and that was a one-off. Like, afterwards, everyone was saying, oh, wow, this is the best that PSG have played in Paris during the Qatari era. So I don't really think we can take that much confidence that PSG will necessarily replicate that performance. So that's why it's so exciting, right?
Yeah,
because
completely.
It's such, like, there are massive question marks over both sets, both teams.
Also, it's probably the tie where there's been the most amount of elements of change basically since it was made, and from the kind of wider perception of teams, because United have changed their manager, and PSG are without their one big star, even if not their best player, and potentially Cavani, and Meunier as well looks like he's out.
It's one of those where I wouldn't really be that surprised if like either team won by a distance. Like, there's a massive variance on both sides in this tie.
Well, that's a strange recent evolution of the Champions League as well. It's also added to this, and that the number of high wins that are often then cancelled out in the second leg, explaining these huge comebacks. It is as if kind of suddenly teams sense some sort of weakness in the opposition at this level, they brutally go for 50 minutes. One of the
Liverpool City, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a really interesting point. I wonder why that is. Maybe it's because the teams that play in the Champions League, by definition, have to do so little defending in the domestic league, like, because they've always got the ball, they're always attacking in the domestic league, that as soon as somebody attacks them, they're like, oh, Christ, we don't know what to do. Like, what do we do? And then they panic. And you can see that a little bit in, like, the travails of Bayern Munich in the last few years, is that they are a team which is so dominant and should be so robust, they fall to pieces under pressure all the time. And the same thing is true of City now.
It's quite a change from what the Champions League, I suppose, used to be even a decade ago. Because I remember what completely defined it was really, really cagey.
Shit on a stick.
Yeah. But not even going that. Like, I'd say that was kind of a properly negative game rather than a cagey game. I mean, more so in terms of, like, there were high quality, but it was high tension, and the high tension kind of meant there wasn't many goals. Whereas I think the shit on a stick was a more kind of prominent example, if you know what I mean,
because the
two managers that were there. But even between, say, really attacking sides, like, say, Barcelona Benfica in 05-06, I think it was 1-0 over two legs. Whereas that's something basically.
Barca Man United 2008?
Yeah, that as well, yeah. So basically, I think a quality that has defined Champions League knockout football or European Cup knockout football for 40 years has been completely exploded in the last 5 years. In fact, there's a piece in that, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't be. Yeah, it's cool, actually, isn't it? Like, going into these games knowing that. You wouldn't be surprised to see big wins either way. Like, should we move on to Tottenham Dortmund?
Yeah, why not?
So, Migs and I are going to Tottenham Dortmund at Wembley on Wednesday. And again, I do think you'll see a lot of attacking from both teams. Like, Tottenham certainly only ever attack, even though they don't have Kane and Ali.
The first legs of Champions League knockouts are traditionally cagey. So we think it's going to be different.
Yeah, I do think it will be different. I also think Dortmund have...
I don't think they have been cagey anymore. When was the last cagey Champions League first leg you can think of, actually?
Well, this is a trick question, because I don't remember all the Champions League knockout ties that ever happened, and you do. So it's a completely unfair question to ask me. It's like me asking you, like, the last good Palace performance. But I think, it's just been a thing, isn't it? You know, the goals are much lower in the first leg because teams play more defensively, you know, and they're higher in the second leg because the stakes are more immediate and on the line. I guess that's actually just a result of how things happen.
Sorry to cut across you, but if you look at it, I do think that has changed specifically in the last 2 years. If you think of some of the most prominent games of that time, so you had Spurs 2, Juventus 2, Spurs 2 in Turin. with a brilliant comeback. We've had the Liverpool City games, Barca Roma, PSG Barca. And I also linked to that, I think, now this might be relevant to the wider debate about the away goal, but I think actually that's becoming less relevant. It's one of those kind of law of unintended consequences where actually, where I think the away goal stifled attacking football for a while, it's actually come back around and that it's helping perpetuate these massive scorelines because and teams suddenly think they can get them back. But another old thing of basically teams going away in the first leg and kind of just, you know, keeping it tight, that appears gone now. And it does feel, I probably need to look at the stats in this to really back it up, but it feels as if teams now just, when they go to an away ground, maybe this is due to the fact they play each other so often, they're all familiar, they all see each other on TV all the time. They go to a big away ground in Champions League and they're willing to actually play their game.
I certainly think familiarity plays a part in that. I think it's interesting as well that you've got maybe games like Tottenham Dortmund where they are highly rated kind of underdoggy sort of teams. You know, Spurs are still, you know, at a push in the title race, but they are an underdog in the title race and they're an underdog in the Premier League because they've got a smaller wage budget than teams that have finished below them. As things stand, Dortmund are constantly fighting against Bayern, who, unless you really look at the numbers, the sheer scale of Bayern Munich and how much more money they make than the other German clubs is astonishing. Partially because of the historic advantage of having been in Bavaria, which is the industrial heartland, where all the sponsors would come from, so Audi and all these Allianz, I guess, and all these other companies that have basically bankrolled Bayern for years. So they're kind of the underdoggy teams. Man United, PSG are two established teams. Do you actually have a solid prediction? You think United will do this now?
I'd say I'm 51%, 49% in favour of United.
Close, even without.
Yeah, because I think it just, yeah. And ultimately, like, you can't get away from, if Mappe gets a run at that defence.
Curtis.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about United is, and we might see the goals because if you've got Mbappe running at Lindelof or Chris Smalling, then it does feel like curtains, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Roma Porto is also that night. A one sentence preview from you.
Without wishing to diminish the two clubs, because they both have rich European heritage, both been in Champions League finals, Porto have won two. It's almost a shame that these two have met in the last 16, and United PSG have also met, because it means basically two. Well, maybe, see, again, this is. See, that viewpoint I've just raised, I am guilty of precisely this problem of the game at the moment, and I've been seduced by the wealth of Champions League.
Miguel is an absolute sucker for, like, the biggest seven teams and no one else.
I told you, he's a footballing Tory.
A footballing Tory,
as I coined, which is why he's a little bit gutted to see Ajax playing Real Madrid at this stage as well.
No, I want Ajax to... in fact, in December, I backed Ajax to win and was very excited about it. Now, I don't think they will. I think Madrid have turned things around sufficiently, and whereas basically in December Madrid were not using any of their quality, now they are, and ultimately De Jong apart and all the rest of it, they've got, I think, too much mature quality for Ajax, and that will tell.
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts about this game.
I thought you had thoughts.
No, my thoughts are I wanted to interview Matthijs de Ligt, and I thought I was going to, but then the plug got pulled, and that's kind of the extent of my research into that tie.
Well, beyond winning the Champions League, the game possibly has huge significance for the wider football world. Yes, exactly, yeah. And what else happens. The latest I heard was basically that Perez now has no interest in Mourinho. The Solari has done a good job and they're actually quite impressed with him. There is a chance, not unlike Solskjaer, there's a chance that he could get the job in the summer, which could have a massive ripple effect. But then if he loses this, you'd imagine there's absolutely no chance of that.
Rafa? Unfinished business at Real Madrid.
This has
become a fine Rafa job.
Where would you most like to see Rafa in a job?
Well,
actually,
number one, Manchester City. Number two, post Pochettino at Tottenham. I don't know. Arsenal. There's lots of good options out there.
Yeah.
I don't think Arsenal would be very different if Rafa was manager instead of Emery.
I think Benitez is a better manager than Emery.
Yeah.
That's the new thing. Do you want to sign off on that? It's a strong sign off.
I've got a better sign off.
Okay. What subject do you want me to veer you onto for this red hot sign off?
So I want you to say what is. So basically, the answer is seven. What's the question?
What number does Jadon Sancho wear for Borussia Dortmund?
Yeah, it's also how many tweets has Miguel Delaney sent during this podcast recording?
I can check, I think.
I think it's seven. I just checked.
Oh, you did just check. Yes, he sent 7 tweets during this podcast.
I've also sent a few WhatsApps, to be fair.
Good content, is it, Miguel? Really good content?
Yeah, he's been arguing with people about his article. It's really, really good.
Yes, good, good. It's Champions League week. We'll also have Champions League football next week. So when we come back for next Monday, we will review this week's Champions League stuff, which is bound to be great. This weekend's games, which are FA Cup, and that culminates in that big Monday night game, doesn't it? Which is Chelsea Manchester United. Yeah. So
actually, on that, is that for all the talk about?
Is that at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, it's at Stamford
Bridge. So come in and do a podcast before. We'll preview that next Monday during the day. And we'll preview the
Champions League. Is this not a bit of a problem with the FA Cup? Because it's biggest game and they're basically taking it out of the weekend, meaning for a lot of people, for some footballing Tories maybe, there's not much on this weekend.
It's not a good weekend.
Yeah. There are lots of like Newport County fans and Doncaster fans who are giddy at the thought of huge Premier League and players.
And the best of luck to them. Yeah. So they're going to win 8-0.
City might not. It could be one of those freak games on a terrible pitch at Rodney Parade. You're going only to the game on Monday night. That's correct. Jack, you're doing Monday night. And you're also doing a Friday night game. QPR versus Watford. Absolutely brilliant stuff in the FA Cup.
QPR, this is basically the furthest they've gone in the FA Cup since when?
The mid-90s, I think. Early 90s.
Since Trevor Sinclair.
So Trevor Sinclair was the last time they won a third round game outright, as in without needing a replay.
But it was that bicycle, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I had a mate at secondary school, massive QPR fan, got the worst ever tattoo at 14, just saying QPR in like Times New Roman on his chest. Really bad.
How do you get a tattoo age 14?
Because he kind of looked like 16, but he was desperate to get a tattoo.
Don't you need ID?
I don't know. I don't know where he got it. Probably abroad, but. Dreadful, like not even the logo, like not even the proper like field in coloured logo, literally just black text. Anyway, the point being, I remember when QPR got knocked out by Vauxhall Motors and he was like complaining about it and said we always lose in the cup.
But yeah, they got
and then
the
they just
record.
Carried that on for like another 10 years.
They lost something like it was something like 18 out of 21 consecutive FA Cup ties. Like they never got out of the third round, and when they did, they needed a replay to do it.
Which is ironic because QPR's most prominent media fan Tony Incenzo is always going on about the magic of the cup.
That's true.
Yeah,
and the magic of the cup will be, I'm sure, a huge topic next Monday when Miguel dissects Doncaster Rovers against Crystal Palace, Newport County against Manchester City, and many others, as well as our preview of Chelsea versus Manchester United. And next week's piping hot Champions League, we've got Liverpool versus Bayern Munich, because, you know, it means more to them. So until next week, Miguel, thank you for coming in. I know Red Dead Redemption is waiting for you. Jack has to take a phone call.
We've got a match tonight.
Jack is taking a phone call from someone. Actually, I won't say his name because it might be a source at some point. So Jack Bitbrook, thank you for coming in. As always, thank you for listening. If you don't already subscribe, please do. If you don't already subscribe to Independent Minds, the new subscription service from The Independent that gives you access to exclusive articles, events, ebooks, and a new app, all with no advertising, just subscribe today. Only 15p a day, Miguel. What can you get for 15p these days?
Some few penny, 15 penny sweets.
No, not even true, because penny sweets are more expensive than that. So you can't get anything for 15p a day except an Independent Minds subscription. Visit independent.co.uk/podcast to find out more. And tune in next week to find out exactly what's gone down in the Champions League. Goodbye.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.